Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Today on CityCast Denver. If your cell service sucks in the city, you're not alone. But it's not just the Rocky Mountains interfering with your phone calls. It could also be the trees. And nearly two decades ago, the Mile High City was known as Menver, a place supposedly teeming with single dudes. Does this stereotype still ring true? We're digging into these stories and all the other news that happened this week. Today is Friday, February 2nd. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Welcome back to CityCast Denver, the show about the city where recently in my Facebook People You May Know section, a man in a fedora appeared, and his name is Jared Polis. Olivia, I don't know if this is more of a problem with me still checking Facebook or the fact that our governor is a man that wears a fedora.
What?
I know. Wait. I just like was scrolling because honestly, I use Facebook as like the events. I check events that way. And then it was like People You May Know. And I was like, look at this. Dork in a fedora, and then I was like, "Oh, it just says Jared Polis. It's not his official account.
Just our governor.
Just our governor.
How many mutuals?
Oh, I didn't even click to look.
Oh my god,
that's going to be the real question.
Wow, a fedora. Honestly,
not surprising.
He's trying to bring it back. The fashion icon he is, gay villain.
Gay villain.
Maybe
he's got
this. Could be the villain arc.
He leans into his geek vibes a lot, so
it's giving experimental.
Yeah, giving up. And we're confused.
You know,
we don't know what's going on. But anyway, it's Friday. We're in the 5280 Magazine studios in beautiful downtown Denver. Joining me, you have heard her, Olivia Jewel Love, our producer. Hello.
Good morning, Bree.
Good morning. And you also heard her voice. We have a great guest today. She's joined us in the past to talk about everything from strip club regulations to the price of eggs. Denver Post neighborhoods reporter Megan Ululani-Boyanton, welcome back.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Our first story is one of your stories that you brought to us this week, Megan. It's the too long didn't read version is cell service in Denver sucks.
Yeah, that's absolutely it.
So crappy cell phone coverage. You talked to folks from Hilltop to Green Valley Ranch who had this same issue. What did you hear from people?
So what's interesting is what kind of started this story idea was my last apartment was in Cap Hill, right off of 7th Avenue, and I have never had such bad cell service in my life.
Right in the middle of the city.
Yeah, right in the middle of the city, right by the Trader Joe's. And so we struggled, my roommate and I, for about a year. And now that I'm on the Denver Post's New Neighborhoods beat, I was like, we got to get down to the bottom of this because I've noticed that outside of Cap Hill, when I'm driving or, you know, just tootling around the city, there are certain pockets where your cell service just completely drops off. You've got zero bars. And so I wanted to know if other people were struggling with it too. And it turns out that many, many Denverites are.
And it does have that no rhyme or reason feeling where you're just like, oh, this is the area. For me, it's this area of DU. My phone always just drops out. Olivia, do you live in Lakewood. What's your experience with this?
It's really funny because when I'm going on Kipling, towards like I-70 and 6, so towards like Arvada North, I guess. I'm directionally challenged, so Gen Z things. But if I'm on the phone, I'm constantly on Bluetooth on my car talking to my mom. But it will always drop off consistently. In the same spot, which is interestingly very close to the Federal Center, which I find a little suspicious.
I have some conspiracy theories
about that. And
we should do some digging.
The possible bunker that they won't let me come tour.
We have been trying to tour the Federal Center.
They for declined
months.
That.
More to come
invite,
on that.
But yeah, if they'll let us in.
They won't. But and my mom will be like, I can't hear you. Are you on Kipling? And I'll be like, yeah. And then the call will drop. So every time. it's always that street in that spot. So it's very odd. Just like all these people in the story, it's
yeah,
like one
everybody has their
spot.
Spots, right? Yeah.
Every time. Very
so,
weird.
So Megan, what did you find out? Why is cell service so awful?
So I put out a tweet to try and crowdsource for this and got dozens of responses, like you said, with very specific locations, like specific intersections or maybe buildings that they're in. And after talking to the three major carriers, AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, what their spokespeople told me is that a lot of the impact comes from topography. And so not specifically the Rockies, not that far, but the fact that like we have foothills, you know, as we get kind of closer to the edges of the city. And then it can be anything as simple as like the leaves on trees can actually degrade or scatter your service. But it could also be building materials of the building that you're in. And then I actually had a reader reach out to me the next day and say that he used to work on these sites and that it can actually come down to zoning restrictions too that can determine like, you know, if these sites end up being put in poor places and then you get bad performance as a result.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it is a lot of different factors.
Definitely.
Environmental for sure, but like from building to tree.
Yeah, it's super localized. And so the way that like the performance is in the Denver market could be very different from how it is in Phoenix or mm-hmm. in DC.
Interesting. And you talked to the carriers. Did you get a sense that they were aware of this or were working on it? I mean, because I have to be honest with you, I've switched services before and just felt like that would be the solution and then it's not. And then, you know, calling your provider feels like calling into the void. Did they they feel responsive at all?
So I would say that T-Mobile was very upfront about, because I got some very specific complaints that I kind of detail at the bottom of the story. And I would say that they were direct in saying, you know, hey, thanks for outlining these particular neighborhoods, like the one that I live in now, Baker. These are areas that we're going to continue, like, you know, working on setting up new transmission poles. You know, this is on our radar. I think the other two carriers gave me kind of more of like the broad stroke outline of the investments that they're making into the community and how many cell sites they have, which I guess it can be hundreds. Mm-hmm. And actually, the further that you get away from your particular carrier's site, the worse your service gets. So I've learned a lot. It was definitely something that I think I didn't know as much about, like the, I don't know, devices that we have in our pockets and why my service sucks so badly in certain places.
It's interesting to me hearing this about Denver because when I was a reporter up in the foothills, it was obviously a huge complaint, a huge issue I was hearing from everyone. Because a lot of those areas are really rural and they're in the mountains. So a lot of it is, you know, being able to get service to, you know, you can't really bury lines up there. A lot of them were getting lines up there. I know that there were some initiatives up in like Bailey and up in those unincorporated areas around there that they were trying to get Starlink and stuff, but it was a really slow process and they were having to like prove need and stuff. And it was just, I would constantly get emails from people being like, I can't even work from home because, you know, my service drops out for my phone, for my Wi-Fi, for everything. So it's interesting to hear that even in the city,
oh,
people
similar
are struggling
problems
with that too.
Yeah, like in Hilltop, one of the women that I talked to said that she has to do Wi-Fi calling. And that's, I think, one of the most expensive neighborhoods in the city.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, so it kind of just doesn't even matter where you live. You might have
crappy doesn't depend
service
on class.
it's still an issue. I'm also thinking about, I feel like there was a story last year about carriers and providers, this issue impacting when someone like calls 911. Like thinking about beyond, you know, using our phones, which we do every day, all day long for all sorts of everyday things. But when it's in an emergency, it feels almost like
we had a thing
scary
like that happen up in Clear Creek County that their like emergency lines went down, something to do with people's phones not working and the emergency services. So it can be a real dangerous issue.
Oh, yeah. I had a reader, another reader reach out, and he said that he lives in a suburb of Denver. And that's something that else that I had heard a lot was it's not just the city, of course, it's,
totally,
it's the suburbs too, especially as you get closer to the mountains. But this man said that he has had, you know, emergency situations like having to call the police, having to call an ambulance, and that during those times, he actually had to like walk away from the house, away from the emergency just to maintain service while on the phone with 911.
Yeah, that's scary. That's so scary. That's, but it's also, it's just like an ongoing modern problem too. Do you feel like there's changes being made, or are we just, because the other thing I think about is like cell towers are often really ugly.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an issue, is like people don't want them in their neighborhoods,
right.
But we also need them. We're a growing city. I wonder if there's anything that's going to change.
I think that's the point that that one reader, and I wasn't able to do research into, you know, his points, so take this with a grain of salt. But when he was talking about zoning restrictions,
sure.
It's, you know, sometimes residents, they don't want this giant tower right there. But he's like, as a result, you might suffer from, you know, poor service. And I guess another factor is it depends on how broad the area is too. So for these smaller towns, it might only take one cell site to cover the entire town. But in Denver, it takes hundreds, and that's hundreds per carrier. So
they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're going to be everywhere. Whose plan are you guys on?
AT&T.
Yeah, me too.
Which AT&T. Scored worst.
That's what I have too, I think. I'm also on my sister's plan, so I have no idea.
Yeah. I'm on the family plan.
I'm on my parents.
My parents won't let me leave.
I don't want to leave.
No, my husband's on a plan from AT&T from like 1998 with his family, and it's like such a good deal.
Exactly.
They're never gonna. He's never gonna leave his parents.
I don't want to leave.
Like, if my boyfriend and I get married, do I have to integrate him onto the plan?
Oh, my
like, is this gonna be a legacy phone plan?
Okay, and then my last question though is, what was your first cell phone?
Oh, I had one of those. It wasn't a Nokia, but it was like a, it was a red, not a flip phone, but it was one of those that you could like push it.
Was it like an LG chocolate phone?
Something like that. It was red though. You push it up. And I remember playing Snake on it. But yeah, my parents didn't let me get a phone until like freshman year of high school. So I was like, Mom, Dad, please. And then they give me this thing. But I learned really well how to text underneath the table at dinner.
Oh,
my
yeah.
parents were like, you know, no phones at the table. So I could be having a conversation with them and texting underneath.
And not even looking.
Click, right. Give it a quick glance and then send to whoever my crush was that day. So
Olivia, what about you? What was your first phone?
I don't know, like, what it was. It wasn't one of the like cool named phone, but it was sparkly purple, so I will give it that. And it had like the little center button on it was hot pink, so that was my brand
aesthetically,
obviously. But it
you.
Was a slide up phone, and it had a QWERTY keyboard.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because as we know, I am Gen Z, so I did not ever have to do the texting on the number keys.
T9.
I always had a QWERTY keyboard. But I think I got my phone in like sixth grade, which is crazy.
Wow.
I know. I really think it was that young.
I mean, it makes sense though. You're born into this digital age.
But my parents were very like strict with the phone. We had to turn it in before bed, so we weren't texting
at
night. So my parents, like, it would charge in their room at night. They disabled the internet button, so you couldn't accidentally hit the internet button and charge it like $5. You know,
Scott,
you
were smart.
How you were like,
they
oh my
knew
god,
what was up.
Yeah. And yeah, everything that could everything like get me into trouble, was disabled.
Smart though,
which was very smart.
That's smart.
So yeah.
Well, I'm a cusp Gen Xer, so I didn't get my first phone till college, and it was a Nokia. And I also played Snake on it, and this was pre-texting, so I didn't even have that option. Later on, I did get a Sidekick, though, which was pretty sick.
I do feel like we're very generationally represented right now, though, because I'm a Zillennial. I'm, like, right at the end of being a Millennial, so.
And we, yeah, I'm a Gen Z, or I'm a Gen X Millennial cusp, and you're full Gen Z. Look at our stories.
I am.
So cute. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, another news story. All right, and we're back. It's February, Valentine's Day is coming up, and this inevitably means conversations about dating in Denver, or in the past, as it has been called, Menver. you brought this topic to us, Megan, and I did a little bit of digging. I can't wait to hear what you've been finding out. This is for a story upcoming you're working on, but the first mentions I could find of Denver's nickname being Menver were going back to 2006 in Westword. Westword described Menver as our, quote, reputation for having a surplus of single males. And at that time, in 2006, the ratio was 53% male to 47% female in Denver County. I mean, I guess that's, I mean, it's a difference. I don't think it's a huge difference.
Right.
In 2017, Westward followed up with more Menver numbers and said the U.S. government data suggests there are actually more available men than available women in the Mile High City, at least 19,000 more, in fact. But Megan, you've been looking into this Menver of 2024. What have you found?
It's not looking good. I pitched this story to The Know, which covers entertainment at the Denver Post, because so I moved here in 2022 from DC, and before I left, I had first heard of this Menver reputation. So it's nationally known because I had friends in DC that were like, you're going to move there and you're going to get a boyfriend immediately. Like, everybody knows that, like, you move to Denver if you want to get into a committed relationship, because there are, like, so many more men there that outpopulate women. So this was like the national recognition of Denver amongst women and LGBTQ people, even just a couple of years ago. And it was funny in my case, because that is how it worked. I met my boyfriend, who would become my boyfriend, like, a month after, like, moving here on a camping trip.
Oh, wow. That is a very most Denver Colorado story. Yeah. Yes.
But we started dating like 3 months later, and I was like, I'm one of the stats. But now, a couple of years later, so I was kind of spared from the apps, but I have a bunch of girlfriends who have been on it, and they've been saying that, you know, it's looking bleak out here. I've heard theories about how people think, I mean, I don't know if this is Denver specific or just in every big city, but that, you know, all of the good ones have officially been taken now.
Right.
And it came to a head because there's a popular podcast, a love and dating podcast called Girls Gotta Eat. And they're based in LA, but they have a bunch of girlfriends in Denver, and they were ranking best and worst cities to date in. And this came out on Monday. And they said that from all of their listeners in Denver, it's been crazy, because as of 5 years ago, they also referred to it as Menver. This is where, like, you know, women go if they want to find, you know, a partner. And now they said that it's totally flipped on its head since the pandemic, that all they hear from Denver listeners are about how men out here have Peter Pan syndrome. And and for people who might not know what that is, it's that they never want to grow old, never want to, I guess, they
terminally
stay exactly
teenagers or
exactly
children.
Stay one age for the rest of their life. That men out here have commitment issues, that they prioritize everything else above relationships. So I knew that this would be open the floodgates when I kind of put out a few all calls for tea, but but I've not been disappointed thus far.
Interesting. Olivia, I would say, I mean, you've moved here in the last couple of years as well. You've also recently met someone. What Megan's saying, does this reflect your experience?
I mean, I'll say I've been on the apps. I will say I've seen a lot of the Peter Pan syndrome, as you'll say, but I don't know that that's unique to Denver so much as it is unique to men in a certain age group.
Generationally, like, maybe a little bit.
Like, yeah, it just seems like a lot of guys in this, like, age group don't know what they want yet, maybe. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. That's my uneducated guess on that. But I don't know.
What I hear you're saying, though, is kind of tying into this other narrative we're hearing right now, which is like how millennials and Gen Zers maybe don't feel like adults for certain reasons, because these things that we've been told are markers of adulthood we can't achieve, right? Like owning a home or getting married at a certain age. And I wonder if that just, like, has a little bit to do with the Peter Panness is like, well, I can't really attain those things, so I might as well just do whatever I want. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I've definitely heard the, like, stereotype of Denver men and women being, like, afraid of commitment, for sure. Like, I've seen lots of TikToks making fun of it, being like, we're Denver girlies, we're not going to commit to you. Like, a lot of that. And I don't know that that's necessarily unique to here or just to people in this generation.
Yeah.
I mean, I've certainly, like, met plenty of guys who are like that, but I've also met plenty of guys who are like...
I met plenty of guys like that too 20 years ago here. You know what I mean? I don't know if it feels particularly...
I mean, I think there's a lot of single guys here.
Yeah.
That's what I was wondering too, because like the 2006 experience that Westward sort of created this picture of was like, yeah, it's just men teeming with men. and Megan, is that what folks are telling when you reach out, when you hear it from folks, what are they telling you about their like experience actually in the city?
So I will say, of course, I've had friends weigh in, and I can't quote them, but they have been great for background research. One of my guy friends, he's 35, and he's lived here at least 10 years. And he responded to my alt call and was like, I know you can't use this, but just, you know, from my perspective, I do think that there are way more women here now than when I first moved here. And so I thought that was really interesting, because I think he was probably part of that first wave of, or part of that initial wave that made Menver.
Sure.
But I don't, when I was, you know, briefly on the apps for a few months out here, I mean, I don't think that compared to some of my friends' experiences, I thought that I had a really great time, I think, like dating and meeting guys out here. Like I thought that I met some like really nice people, although it ultimately didn't work out. But I don't know. It seems to me that I don't think that it's availability is the issue. It sounds more like, from what I've heard from different women, that it's the quality of man.
Exactly. Okay. That's like a really nice way of saying it, because it's like there's a lot, but it's like, are you gonna want
what's out there?
Yeah, I don't know. And it's interesting because like as someone, I spent a little bit of time on the apps, and it's interesting because like there's a lot of like different types of people on the different apps. Like
it seems like almost like a paralysis of choice. Like there's so much to choose from,
or maybe the app experience.
Experience too, because that's the other thing I'm thinking about with this Menver thing of 2006, when people were meeting online, apps didn't exist yet. And meeting online, I will say, 20 years ago was not something you talked about out loud.
Right.
It was sort of a, not a shame thing, but like a, you know, we met on, like I had a boyfriend I met on MySpace kind of thing. And like my friends knew, but it wasn't something you super talked about. And it's such a different experience now. Like I have tons of friends that met on Tinder, on Hinge, that are still together. So maybe it's just like that difference too in the accessibility of how we're meeting people.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a reflection of our modern society. I mean, we do everything online. Why wouldn't we also meet people online? So,
I felt like when I was on the apps, it was kind of like, and maybe this is why, you know, it's better that I meet people in person, because for me, I feel like having like my Hinge, it was almost like having a Tamagotchi on my foot, where it's like I had my profile and I'd maybe check in every few days and feed it. And then, then, you know, a week goes by and then you're like, oh, hey, I forgot about this. But I will say that I've been getting a wide range of like ages and sexualities. And I spoke with a woman yesterday who's in her 50s and she's dating again. And what I thought was really interesting was that she had moved here. She just broke up with a long-term partner. And she had moved here, I think, 15 years ago or so from New York. And that was the last place that she had dated. And she said that in New York, they're dating stereotypes back then were what ism do you have? Do you have workaholicism? Do you have alcoholism? Like that was the stereotype there. Whereas here she says that the issue has more so been, okay, do you have the capacity to fit me into your schedule? Because she says that she'll meet nice people, but that they'll be like, hey, we can go for a date tonight, but then I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks mountain biking, and then I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be skiing every weekend until April, and then, you know, it's just that here everybody's so full of activities all the time that it's hard to find somebody who will give you a chance to pursue a relationship when they have so many other things going on.
That's so interesting. Also, just like thinking about New York dating, I'm sure, versus here. I lived in New York for a little while. It's like, again, there's just so many people, so many different types of people, places you can meet people that are into different things. And I can see where Colorado too has people move here because of that lifestyle thing. So Also, maybe if you're not one of those people, it's harder to meet folks. You know, if you're not a super active person, I don't know. This is just like the other thing I'm thinking about is the straight codedness of the Menver conversation of 2006 was very much just about heterosexual relationships. Did you find, Megan, talking to folks that that is kind of not out the window, but we're talking about many different types of folks and experiences and relationships now.
Definitely. Well, and what I have found actually from my own personal experience being an LGBTQ person and some of my close girlfriends is that, and actually even some of my sources, is that dating women out here is very hard. I've heard that is, I guess that may play into the Menver stereotype just because one of my best friends, she says that, you know, the queer community out here among women and eligible women, it is so small that, you know, you date one woman and then it's like everybody that you date from there on out is either friends with her or knows her or and the source that I talked to yesterday said that it's a lot harder to meet women out here than it was when she was back in New York. And I found that to be the case, too, when I was on the apps. I felt like for every woman that I was trying to talk to, there were maybe two or three for every, you know, 30 men. So I do think that the landscape, at least among, you know, lesbian and queer women is definitely scant.
I could see that too. Just reflective in Denver versus somewhere like a New York or an Oakland, where it's just more an openly queer place. And it's not that we aren't a queer place, but we're clearly not attracting as many queer folks to the community of Denver to shift that dynamic a little bit.
The women are cuffed and the Menvers are still looking.
And that's this is, I think, an area of reporting that I definitely want to flesh out before the story wraps next week is I'd love to talk to more LGBTQ men who are dating men to find out. I mean, since it is Menver, do they have any issue meeting men out here? I'd be curious to know.
Yeah, that would be great to find out.
So if you're listening, reach out to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can put a link in our show notes for folks to reach out to you because definitely the more stories you can get, the better picture you can get of what a Denver of 2024 looks like for folks in the dating world.
This is very much a crowdsourcing story. So please come to me with your hot takes, with your tea. I'd love to hear it.
We need it. We need the tea to survive.
We need the gossip.
You can also, you can call our hot dating hotline, 720-500-5418. Let us know what you think about Menver, the idea of a Menver in 2024 and how that maybe is or is not reflected in your experiences in the dating world. We're going to take one more break. And when we come back, our wins and fails of the week. And we're back. Wins and fails, Rocky Mountain highs and lows, things that were awesome this week in Denver, things that totally sucked. Let's start with fails so that we can end on a good note. Olivia, do you have a fail?
I've got a fail.
Let's hear it.
I'm so excited for this fail because, Megan, when you walked in with your Stanley Cup, I got so excited, which I'm not going to lie. I have a Stanley Cup. I am a cup girly. Anyone playing the Olivia girly drinking game, take a drink now.
Yep.
But there's the Stanley Cup lead scare.
Oh, I did see this.
There's this whole thing that went around that, oh my God, Stanleys have lead in them. We're talking about the viral Stanley Cup. It's got the little handle on the side, straw at the top, fun colors. You have to have seen them unless you live in a bunker. Anyway, so everybody's like, oh my gosh, there's lead in them. And then some people started doing at-home lead tests, which, according to professionals, are highly unreliable.
I know, I was going to say, but it's just like I saw a bunch of pictures of someone with a dirty Q-tip.
Yes.
And was like, look what I found.
At any rate, scientific. Everybody has ran with this. And they're like, oh my God, lead. Well, some scientists were like, turns out, yeah, there is lead on the inside of the cup. Nowhere where you're going to touch it when you drink. It's like on the inside, but it's not on any of the superficial surfaces.
Okay.
But there's a doctor that weighs in on this. I'm looking at a New York Times article because New York Times was
New York Times was on
Let's
it.
Let's pick up on the Stanley trend because clickable. Clickable.
Baby.
This doctor calls this poor thinking to use any sort of lead to begin with on a drinking cup because I'm really disheartened and sort of angry that a company like this uses a known toxic ingredient that is banned in many applications for a cup. He said, I mean, surely there could have been an alternative. Oh, okay. So no, you're not going to get lead poisoning, but there is lead inside the cup. And okay. It's just funny. And
I'd be curious what our other brands are carrying around.
Other brands have responded, such as Hydro Flask came clapped back on Instagram, and they said they had a little carousel. And they said lead question mark. They said, oh, we've never had lead on our bottles.
I love brands talking to each other. Brands snapping their way through a carousel.
Yeah. So anyway, there's lead, but you're not going to have any problems unless you, like, break it open and lick it. So
yeah, I think Stanley put out a statement that they said the only way that you could have lead exposure is if it gets destroyed.
Crack it open or something.
So don't...
Should we crack it open?
I mean, for the bin.
Smash it out front.
Let's do it. Anyway.
So, you know, maybe we just have to go back to the old Colorado style of a Nalgene bottle with some lukewarm water
some
in it.
Some microplastics.
And a little bit of microplastics.
PFAS?
That's my boyfriend's favorite right there.
The old school Nalgene? Yeah.
That's, like, very man-coded.
Yeah. Truly.
Room temp Nalgene.
It's not cutesy.
No, it's not
room
cute.
Temp Nalgene.
It's not giving
the bottle
pop.
Looks like he's gnawed on it a little, but he's probably
or his dog has.
But it's like probably just like hit a bunch of concrete.
Megan, do you have a fail?
Yes, and it's in my apartment building, which for the most part I love, but the neighbor, like three doors down from me, keeps leaving like his boxes in front, like. First it was to the side of his door, and they've been sitting out there. They're like supposed to go to recycling,
like empty Amazon boxes.
Exactly, and they've been sitting out there for like days now. So when I get done with this podcast, I'm about to go be a Karen and go and talk to my property manager and be like, "We got to handle this," because I like at this point, since I live so close to it, I've like moved the boxes like in front of his door to like signal angry
like,
neighbor,
sir.
And when I walked by it last night, it was just like stomped over. Like so, and so okay, this is my theory, and I could be totally making this up, but my theory is because there's a man's name on these boxes, is that I wonder if a man and his girlfriend live there together, and that she's been nagging him to take out these boxes, and so she was like, you know, I'm gonna put the boxes outside and then he can just take care of it. And then when I moved it back in front of the door, I wonder if she saw that, was like, he still hasn't taken out these boxes, and, like, stomped all over them to get inside. I don't know. This is my theory.
You're getting into passive-aggressive note territory, maybe.
I was thinking that this morning, actually.
I think you should make, like, a fort out of them or, like, a tower. Somehow tape them together and, like, draw on it. And just be like,
take me to the recycle.
This is the capital of passive-aggressiva.
Right. Should I start just piling my recycling on top of it in front of their door?
See if
this
is where it goes. If he takes it all, eventually.
Maybe the whole hallway will band against this man.
Probably. We love some.
Gosh. If you're listening,
community
sir.
Action.
Yeah. Take your recyclables.
Take your recycling boxes. Out. Flatten it, please. Thanks.
I'm so upset about it.
All right.
All right, Bree, your fail?
My fail is Graystar, the apartment rental company, is unfortunately at it again. It's yours? They own your building?
I just did a story on them.
Maybe my old one. Actually,
well, they have been sued.
Yep.
Or they're in the process of being sued by a Colorado woman, I think from Lakewood, right? Mm-hmm. For junk fees being tacked onto her rent. But they're at it again by charging a family $4,000 in early termination fees and keeping the deposit of their mom's unit because she died.
Oh, jeez.
Mm-hmm. The rental company says her dying meant she broke her lease.
So they should just leave her in there?
I mean, I couldn't. I was like, I don't even know how to process this for this family. They're already going through hell, and this is the response of their rental company. So, like, big fail, Graystar.
Oh, I almost want to reach out and get, like, an exact statement from them on this.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously.
They should just, like, it's so morbid, but just, like, leave her in there and be like, all right, here's some cleaning fees. Like, God. Okay, I guess she's going to, like, get her rent's worth.
And she passed away unexpectedly, and her family was just, like, taking care of everything, and all of a sudden they just get a bill from Graystar for $4,000.
Our readers love stories about landlords. When we broke the news about the attorney general. Oh no, sorry. That was with a different.
There was $1 million suit though with another rental company
that got like 50,000 clicks. This Graystar class action proposed class action lawsuit has gotten a ton of views. People in Colorado love reading stories.
But think about how many folks are renting right now too.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean? And like, This woman was living in like a 55 plus community. Her family was really, she'd moved in there just in October. She hadn't been there super long. They were super excited to have her in a place that was like for her. And just to have that, you know, you're already dealing with death, just like such a nightmare. Jeez. So thumbs down, Gray Star.
Ooh.
Let's talk about happy stuff. Olivia, what's your win?
I think that, okay, so this is like coming from, I guess Fox 31 tweeted this. And I think that they were trying to like kind of stir the pot and get people to like just rage in the comments. But which, you know, I guess.
I mean, if you're tweeting at this point,
I guess that's
yes.
kind of what we're doing now. But I took it as a win because I think it is. So they were like, the whole premise of this was that since 2018 in Colorado, you can now have your sex on your driver's license be male, female, or X. And you don't have to have any like medical documentation or any surgeries or any behavioral documentation, anything like that. You can now
just a choice.
Just have it, you know, you can make the choice, or if you're under 18, your parent can make the choice. And so they were saying like, we got this data that says since 2018, it's gone up every year that people, you know, now there's over 1,000 people in 2023 that put X on their license, which
great.
Yeah, I was like, amazing. I was like that. I think that's a huge win and also a huge duh.
Yeah.
Because like you just started allowing this to happen. And so, of course, more people are going to do it. But they were kind of implying like, oh, my gosh, more people are becoming gender non-binary.
Right. Just because the option's there.
And I'm like, I don't think that that's how that works. But I do think it's a huge win. I'm glad that people have that option for their license. And, you know, however you want to spin it on Twitter, that's how I took it. Great job, Colorado. I'm glad we can do that.
No, I love that. And that's also, I mean, but when you look at similar trends, too, it's just so. So the Census Bureau, I'm multiracial. And as of a few years ago, they let you identify as multiracial. And so in the years following, that was also, everybody was like, oh more gosh. People, right? There's more multiracial
people
right now. And it's like, well, you just gave us the option to choose that. So duh. Like, so that
do you think
totally
they just spawned? Like,
right.
What?
That's such an easy rage baity thing too, though. So you know what I mean? To just be like, oh my God, more gay people than ever.
That's what everyone was doing in the comments. And I was like, let's just like use a little reasoning here.
Yeah.
But
it is one of those easy clickbaity things.
Yeah. At any rate, I was like, that's a huge win. I'm really happy for us. You know, all my non-binary people out there.
Good for us. I'm going to go and then I'm going to have you go, Megan, because mine is like good, but it sounds like a bummer. SeaQuest in Southwest Plaza is closing. Fox 31 reported this was the sort of like entertainment animal space that opened in 2018. And I think within a week of opening, they had complaints about the treatment of the animals based on like basic USDA and agricultural the basic things, the way they should be doing, taking care of these animals. The inspector said that SeaQuest Littleton had multiple back rooms where they were keeping birds and animals that had unsealed concrete floors, as well as where macaws were tearing into drywall.
Oh, geez.
Oh, it was awful. Fox went in to investigate themselves in 2018 and found a murky tank going through bacteria bloom, filthy enclosures of the capybara pen, and an escaped lizard on concrete floors. But all that to say, this place doesn't get to be open anymore. So they're closed.
Well, thank God for that.
Yeah, I just hope the animals get rehomed.
Yeah, I was going to say, does it say where they're going?
They don't. Unfortunately, this is a chain of places. Yeah. So they may be taking these poor animals to another
place. I was reading that they've had a lot of like investigations into violations
in
the
since
past.
They opened.
The details are just horrible. So
I had never heard of this.
Very sad.
Of this place.
Very sad. A lot of animal abuse. So I'm glad that they're closing.
At least they're closing this location. Hopefully this leads to investigations into their other spaces.
So. Good opportunity. Donate to your local conservation org.
Yeah. Sanctuary. Wild animal sanctuary. Megan, you want to close this out with your win?
Absolutely. So, over the past couple of years, it's been news around Denver that the Department of Excise and Licenses has launched a new residential rental property license program, which means that both single units and multifamily units have to go to the city and pass these certain inspections in order to get a license from the city, because the city's trying to get a good count on the amount of apartments here in Denver, and also to make sure that there's kind of like a baseline standard of living across the board. So since then, they've all of these mandates have gone into effect. And as of now, every apartment should be licensed. And so today, Excise and Licenses just launched a portal where if you suspect that your apartment is not licensed and you're dealing with any you know, unsanitary or unsafe conditions, that you can actually file a complaint directly with the department and they will check into it for you.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's great. I know that tenants' rights have been a big conversation here in the last couple of years, and giving folks that opportunity to interact directly with the city agency that handles this, I feel like is a great step for tenants, because so often it feels like the landlords only have that direct line. But now you have a place to say, hey, like maybe my water's been out, yeah. My hot water's been out, or, you know, we have a pest problem or something. So
yeah, big that's win. Awesome. Big yeah. win for tenants, because my last landlord was, it was just a really terrible living situation. So I know that I would have loved to have had, you know, such a direct line of access to the city to like look into
totally. It. To have that's some, great. Yeah, to have some autonomy over your, I mean, it's just, it's a common conversation. I think about how many times we've talked about renting and just in this show, even not even related to just this particular thing. It's something that so many folks in the city are doing. So that's awesome.
Good win.
Cool. Well, Megan, Olivia, thank you so much.
Thank y'all so much for having me. It's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah. Great to chat with you guys.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were Paul Caroli, Olivia Jewel Love, and Lizzie Goldsmith. Peyton Garcia and Adrian Gonzalez write our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, and I'm Bree Davies, your host. Our music is by Los Mogachetes, with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren. If you haven't already, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, follow us on Instagram at CityCast Denver, and tell all the single people in your life about us next time you see them. You can sign up for our daily newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. See you next week. I've been listening to Nirvana so much, and I haven't listened to Nirvana this much since like 1993, when I was 13 and I was in love with Kurt Cobain. I had a dream last night. He was my boyfriend, and it was a great dream. I was hanging out with Nirvana. It was kind of awesome.